Okay. We're going to spend a few moments just thinking about this part of our series. We've started a series a couple of weeks ago called Foundations, where we're looking at the early chapters of the book of Genesis, right at the beginning of your Bibles. If you pick up a Bible and start at the beginning, these are the first verses, the first pages that you'll read. But often we kind of read through it, and we kind of carry on through it, and for many of the Christians, we kind of get to the New Testament, and that's where we kind of stay, and we kind of miss the fact that the Old Testament is there. We've called this series Foundations, Beginning with God. The reason we've done that is because everything that we need for our faith, we find in Genesis chapters 1 to 11. Everything that we need to help us and to point us to the solution that we need. Now, ultimately, obviously, Jesus comes as a fulfillment of a lot of those promises. But the foundations of our faith, the bricks that we build around our faith around, they're all found in these early chapters of the book of Genesis. However, there are some challenges with the book of Genesis. And for some Christians, it's easier to kind of skim through these pages and to kind of not face up to the challenges and not face up to the really difficult stuff that's there. But we're not going to do that either. It might surprise you to know. We're going to tackle them head on. We're going to face up to what's there, and we're going to try and understand what God is saying to us. Yesterday, I mentioned the EBA gathering that we were in Billericay, and one of the seminars that I went to in the afternoon was by a guy called Phil Knox. Phil used to work for Youth of Christ. He now is the head of missions to young adults at the Evangelical Alliance. His role has been appointed by the Evangelical Alliance to help the church to engage with the millennial generation, the missing generation from our churches, the 20-somethings who are not in church, realistically speaking. There's a few, which is great, and we welcome you, but there's not so many of them around our churches. And his role is there. And he was talking about the challenge of our culture today and how culture has shifted and the challenge that brings to us as the church to think about how we do church in such a way that we're relevant. And there's some really interesting stuff in that for us to process and to think through as a church over the coming months. But one of the things he said was, the challenge is there are some things as a church we hold on to dearly which actually we need to let go of. And there are other things which, if we're not careful about, we don't hold so dearly to, which we really need to hold on to and hang on to. And it's distinguishing between the two. What are the truths on which we need to stand? But at the same time, what are the things where we need to be flexible and need to adapt to our culture and to the changing society? And I believe some of the stuff that we need to hang on to is here in Genesis 1 through to 11, but it's the stuff that our society and our world and our nation says to us, you need to change. And I would disagree and say, no, we don't need to change. We need to stand on the word of God and understand what God says to us. And that shapes how we engage with our world. So as I said last Sunday and the last two Sundays, actually some of what we're saying is not very PC in our world today. The world would say we're not tolerant. We're not this, that, the other. The first verse of the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, is very exclusive. In the beginning, God. One God. Not lots of gods. One God. In the beginning, God. That immediately puts us at odds with many in our world. But there is one God. The first Sunday, when we touched on that, that's online. The next last Sunday's is not yet online, but all the talks will be online. And if you want to come, you can come back and listen to those if you want to. 2 weeks ago when we started, we reminded ourselves that there is one God. And God didn't have to create the world. God wasn't obliged to make us. God chose to create the world. God chose to make us. God chose us. The God who is outside of time, the only one who is before and has no beginning and no end. And we can't get our heads around that because our brains are wired to everything having a beginning and an end. So anything that's beyond that, we can't comprehend it. But God has no beginning and no end. That same God chose to create you. Last week, I set out my opinion about creation. that I believe, I don't believe in the literal 7-day or 6-day creation that happened in 24-hour periods, as some would teach. I believe that there is the creation story and text can sit alongside the evolutionary theory stuff, apart from in one instance, and I'll come back to that a little bit later this morning. But there's order in creation. God created with order. And so on day one, he creates day and night. On day two, he creates sky and seas. On day three, he creates land and vegetation. And that's what we covered last Sunday. We looked at, what God is doing is creating the stage and the platform and the arena in which the rest of creation is going to operate. And all of this was good. Creation is good. And we remind and challenge that we need to take responsibility for this. God entrusted this to us to look after. And so there's a challenge for us. How we use the earth's resources, how we care for the earth, what we do, the choices that we make in terms of how we live. And let's face it, it's not for us. It's for our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, and generations to come. What legacy are we leaving them? What are they going to have to face and deal with that we've left them to do? What commentaries are going to be made about our generation in years to come when they look back and they go, that was the most selfish generation on this planet. Look what they did to our world. I don't want that to be on my epitaph and part of my legacy for our world. I want my offspring down the line, if God gives them to us, to have a world of which they can be proud and look after and care for. So we have an obligation, and there was a challenge last Sunday about what that looks like, and each of us have got to respond to that. And as a church, we need to respond to that. What does it mean for us to be mindful of the climate issues around? You can't put a head in the sand and say it's not for us, because God says to us, you are responsible. We'll come to that a little bit later. So God created the platform, the stage, the arena, the form under which everything happens. And then he starts to populate it with purpose now. And so in day four, sun, moon, and stars. See that, the parallel there? Day, night, sun, moon, and stars. Next one, sky, seas, fish, and birds. Parallel, order. Day six, animals and man, those that will live on the land. There is order to how God creates, and that's there for us to see throughout the creation that we look around us, see around us. So we're going to focus today on days 4 through 7, second half of Genesis chapter 1. Can't do justice to it in the next 15 minutes, but I'll try to do what I can. Okay. So we're going to read this text. This is, and we're going to pause at the end of each kind of section, all right, and make a couple of comments. So this is day 4, okay? God said, let there be lights in the vault of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark sacred times and days and years. And let them be lights in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth. And it was so. God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and the night and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. I want to pause there for a moment and just focus on that verse, because I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago and I think we just need to touch on it again today. God's set in place sun, moon, stars. He gave them a purpose. Here it is. Three purposes, three things. God set them in the vault of the sky to give light on the earth. One. Okay? Two. Goes on to say, to govern the day and the night. Three. To separate light from darkness. Okay, that is the three things that God gave, the task that he gave the stars for. That's what they're for. And, if you go back to earlier, let them serve as signs to mark sacred times, days, and years. At no point, at anywhere in creation, did God say he was giving stars the role of guiding us as human beings. Okay. So for those of you who are into horoscopes, I'm really sorry, that is not of God. Let me put it that bluntly. Horoscopes are not of God. They are not God's plan and they're not God's purpose. And if we dabble with them and read them, we're wasting our time. The stars cannot guide us because God did not give stars that authority. Okay? Now, some of you may dabble, some of you may read it, just a bit of innocent fun. I could talk to you about people who I know who have started to do it innocently and actually find themselves getting drawn into something because it is not of God. And if it's not of God, there's only one other place it comes from. And that is the enemy, the devil. And he sucks us in, draws us in. It challenges and undermines our faith in God because we start to believe other things. And we see these things, and things sort of start to map out a little bit. And it kind of, well, it works. No, it doesn't, okay? That's part of the smokescreen, part of the lie of the enemy. Genesis chapter 1, day 4, stars do not have any authority, any power to guide our lives, okay? I can't put it more clearly than that. Please, please, please don't look at horoscopes. Don't dabble, don't read it, don't even give it the time of day. Because it is not of God, and therefore it is not for your best and for your benefit. Let's move on to day 5. If you want to come back to me on that, happy to talk about that afterwards, or meet up and talk to you about it. But please, 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 seriously think about that. Because it is, as often you talk to young people, it's the thin end of the wedge. It's the way we get drawn into something that is unhealthy. Okay, so let's be careful. Let's shut that door and not allow that to influence us in any way, shape or form. They are all created objects, created for a purpose. That purpose is to separate day and light and dark, to govern the day and night. They are not there to guide our lives. Day 5, and God said, Let the water teem with living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the vault of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living thing with which the water teems and that moves about in it, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful and increase in number and fill the water in the seas and let the birds increase on the earth." And there was evening and there was morning the fifth day. And God said, "Let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, the livestock, the creatures that move along the ground, and the wild animals, each according to its kind." And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. I want to pause there, and I want to make one comment here. It's, again, something that happened this week. God filled the waters and he blessed these creatures, those in the fish and the birds. And he said to them, "My blessing upon you is that I'm going to bless you and say to you, go and be fruitful." Reproduction is a blessing from God. Okay. It comes as a blessing from God. I want to highlight something. This came up this week on the BBC news page, and it's you may not be able to read that, but you can find it on the news page. Go Google BBC News. There it is at the bottom there. Labradoodle creator says it is his life's regret, and I was struck by that, and I went back to it and I read it further. And this guy, he kind of crossbred Labradors and Poodles at the end of the 1980s, and he created this breed called the Labradoodle. And he says it is his life's regret. He goes on to say in this interview that he talked about the designer dog that he created. He said, "I opened a Pandora's box. I released a Frankenstein. People are just breeding for the money. Unscrupulous breeders are crossing poodles with inappropriate dogs simply so they can say they were the first to do it." This is the guy that started this whole process in the 1980s. And actually, these are now popular dogs. And it's not just Labrador, as he says, there's Cockapoos, there's all sorts of different breeds. But what's happened is they've crossbred. What is the purpose of that? The purpose of it is purely financial gain. And the credit of saying, "I was the first to do it." At what point in Genesis chapter 1 do we see God saying to us as human beings, "Crack on"? We don't. I think as Christians we need to be very careful about supporting stuff which is not biblical and is not with what God's intention for humanity, for animals and for humanity. Crossbreeding, breeding for money, for the wrong reasons. Now again, you might have people in your family who've got these designer dogs, whatever that might be. I don't want to be harsh on it, but we think as Christians, we need to stop and think about what's happening in our world. This guy is not a Christian, by the way, but he's just reflecting back on what he started and what's happened since he started that. So we need to be aware and thinking about what we do and how we support or don't or challenge this kind of culture. Let's move on to day six. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God he created them, male and female he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I will give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth, and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food, and to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds in the sky and all the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. We're going to focus here just for a few moments now. I want to draw your attention to verse 27. God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, male and female, he created them. Doesn't need me to tell you, we live in a world where that statement is not PC and is not tolerated. I'm not going to tackle it today, I'm going to tackle it next Sunday. So if you want to hear about that and what my views on that and what I think the Bible teaches about that, next Sunday, come back or listen to it online. The whole issue of gender identity and that the whole topic, we're going to pick it up next Sunday. I just want to make that clear that I'm not ignoring it. We will be coming back to it next week. I want to draw out two things at this point about this text here. The first is this: mankind, humanity, men and women are special. God says, "Let us." He talks to himself. If you read through the rest of the Genesis 1 account, this is the only time where it says, "Let us." In everything else, it's just let it happen. Here, God talks about this, almost engaging with himself in dialogue. Let us make man in our own image, in our likeness. This is the one thing where I think where the evolution theory does not tie in with Scripture. I do not believe with anything in me that human beings evolved out of an embryo or something that crawled out of a bit of water. I do believe that human beings have evolved in terms of how we look, but I don't believe we've come out of that context because we are created differently to everything else. You cannot read the Genesis account and see us as just evolving from a cell. Human beings have evolved in terms of how we look, absolutely. But we were created differently. We were created special. God chose us. We are created in his image. Nothing else in the whole of creation is made in the image of God. Nothing. But we are. We are made in God's likeness. Every human being is made in the image of God. Every human being. Doesn't matter what they look like, where they were born, what the colour of their skin is. We live in a world, don't we, where these issues are kind of, again, they're right in our faces. whatever your views on the Brexit debate, it has drawn up to the surface the institutional racism and the racism that is in our world. It's brought it to a fore. It's given it a platform from which to shout. It may have been there for a long time, but it's there now, right in our faces, and we cannot ignore it. And yet every human being of whatever culture, whatever skin colour, every human being is created in the image of God. And that affects how we treat people and how we should treat people and how we should talk about people. As a church, we should be a group of people who welcome each and every one as precious people in God's sight, made in the image of God, whatever their baggage, whatever their history, whatever their story, whatever they look like, smell like, do. When they walk through the doors of this church, everybody should feel that they are precious and that they are special, because they are. They are made in the image of God. And this church has been very good at that. But we've got to continue to fight to be that kind of church, those kinds of Christians. And we can lead our culture and our society, and we can say no to what is happening in our world. The second thing I want to draw is that we were created for a purpose. So there in verse 28, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky. God gave us a mandate, and that mandate is to care for the world. There's another purpose. We're going to come back to that next Sunday. But in this context, in this moment, there's one thing he points out to us here is that we were created as he created, as his creation. He gave us the task of caring for this world. Ruling it, not dominating it. Not abusing it. Caring for it. Are we taking our responsibility seriously? Do we do what God asked us to do, which is to care for our world? And so there's another one coming next Sunday. So if you haven't been enough there to kind of want to come back next week, then who knows? But it's all going to be online, and you can catch it up if you want to. Day 7. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. Rest isn't an optional extra. It's not something that we can do or not do. It is built into how creation is. It is built into the order of creation. When I was growing up, I used to live in Suffolk, so surrounded by kind of fields and ploughs and that kind of stuff, and used to go out and see all the tractors and harvest and stuff. And, you know, used to talk about the fallow year that the land needs to have, the arable land needs to have, in order to recover and replenish. It's a pattern that's built into creation, that if you give a bit of land a year off, it will give you the next 6 years better because it's had a year off. The sabbatical idea of, you know, a time out every 7 years. I've been blessed with that. Tim Williamson, we talked about from Bluntshire, has been blessed with that at the moment. Some of you may have had that experience. Rest is important. It's part of the cycle and the pattern and the order that God has created. And if we ignore that, it's at our own cost. We need time out. We need time to switch off, to rest, to recover. You know, you all know that this is a challenge for me as much as it is for you. And if you don't believe me, you can talk to my wife about this. And she'll tell you. So I know that I'm not just talking as someone who's got it sorted. I'm talking as someone that battles with this, but understands the need for it. And so if I don't answer my phone on a Wednesday to you, that's why. It's not that I don't like you. It's not because I've seen your number and gone, I don't want to talk to them. It's that I'm a day off. But we need to take our break. We need to take time to rest. But what's that rest for? It's not just to do nothing. It's to recalibrate, to refocus, to remind ourselves of what is going on, what's happening in life, what's important in life. God, in this moment, when he took this time, was able to celebrate everything that he had created, to enjoy what he had created, to be blessed by the very good thing that he had just done for the last period of time. We need to take rest, to refocus our hearts and our minds. And the idea of the Sabbath being a Sunday, that's a challenge in our world, isn't it, today? We know that. I did preach on this a couple of years ago when we talked about preached the Ten Commandments. So if you want to listen back to that, it's all online. You can go back to where that is on the Ten Commandments. We preached around remember the Sabbath. Keep it holy. But we need to rest. The biblical mandate to rest. As we remember God's wonderful provision and the harvest and all the good gifts that God gives us, we also need to acknowledge that God's wonderful blessing is that he's poured out on us in Jesus, but also in the rain. And we might not think it at the moment, but boy, does our nation and our country and our land need the rain. I was talking to Pauline the other day, she said, you know, they went up the allotment on Friday morning, and we had torrential rain, and sort of half a centimetre underneath the ground rock hard still. You know, we so need the rain, and it is a gift from God. It is a gift from God to water and to nurture our land. But human beings, friends, brothers and sisters, we are special. You are special. You are made in the image of God. You are created special. Each and every one that you live near, even those neighbours that really wind you up, they are made in the image of God too. And they are special. Hard sometimes, isn't it, when they wind us up and people get up our noses, which they do, because they're human beings too, and we get others up others' noses. It's hard sometimes to remind ourselves, but these people are precious too. Made in the image of God. And God has given that task to care for and love our world. All of creation. And although it's broken, and we'll come to that in a couple of weeks' time, at no point does God ever say to us, because it's broken, you don't have to worry about it. At no point does he take away that responsibility to care for the world. Because it's broken, it's harder. Because it's broken, it's more challenging. But at no point does God say, okay, because it's broken, you don't have to worry about it any longer. We still have that responsibility to care for our world. Let's pray.